You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J, TCRG.
Okay, it is Monday, October 30th, and as an update to last week's episode, which you will be listening to in 2 days, I will have recorded a week ago, we have an update from Sandra Connick, the chairperson of CLRG, on the BBC documentary. So as of time this week's episode was recorded, this statement was not available. CLRG had not commented on the documentary to date. So to kick off today's episode, this is kind of a new development, and I wanted to share that CLRG has in fact shared a statement with their teachers. And it starts, Acarja, as many of you will be aware, BBC Northern Ireland's three-part documentary, The Year That Rocked Irish Dancing, has been airing each Monday night over the last couple of weeks. Ahead of the final episode, which predominantly focuses on historical allegations of wrongdoing at CLRG competitions, I wanted to reach out to assure teachers, dancers, and parents that CLRG is immersed in a process to address these issues and is making real progress introducing change and reform. Like you, I have found it difficult to see our organization and Irish dancing being portrayed in a negative light, and in particular, how the allegations of wrongdoing have impacted dancers participating in our competitions. However, we have to remember it is a historical documentary. CLRG is moving forward with heightened levels of transparency, accountability, and governance. Over the last 12 months, we have taken a series of steps to create an external, independent disciplinary process administered by experienced professionals to conduct hearings for those individuals facing disciplinary. The sentence just ends. November will be our third month of hearings, and this work will continue at pace for the future. From the onset, we have been very transparent about the route and process we have taken, and we will be equally transparent about the outcomes once hearings are complete. At the same time as putting the pieces in place to address the allegations of wrongdoing, we have commissioned, delivered, and shared with you an external strategic review of our organization, its structures, and constitution. Many of you took part in surveys and focus groups, contributing your valuable opinions, which formed a key portion of the report's findings. A new coordination group is now reviewing the report's recommendations in detail. Its goal is to direct those recommendations to the appropriate committees within CLRG and facilitate the consideration of motions at our December meeting. I would also like to address the final statement that BBC Northern Ireland's documentary concludes with, claiming that the FBI has several thousand pages on file relating to investigations of Irish dancing organizations, but providing no further detail. CLRG is not aware of any active investigations and is contacting the FBI to see if there is further information available. Without doubt, the last 12 months have been extremely challenging for our Irish dancing community. However, the disciplinary hearings are taking place and the evolution of CLRG is underway as we work towards creating a renewed organization to represent the interests of Irish dancing across the globe, from Sandra Connick, chairperson of CLRG. So I think at face value, it's a good statement. I'm glad that they did eventually comment or, you know, provide some type of statement around the documentary. I just think it's a good thing to do. I think at face value, it has good content, you know, acknowledging that, like, hey, this documentary is showing a piece of Irish dancing that, you know, whether we like it or not, is now going to be part of our history. I don't really get any traces of denial in this statement. Like, I don't think they're trying to, like, just deny and deflect. I think there is some level of like accountability, which is something that they say in the statement they're trying to move forward with. So I think that is good. And I think I am rightfully skeptical of just making sure that this isn't just lip service and that the actions that they say that they're taking and the change that they're trying to introduce does in fact lead to action and comes to fruition. So that is the update on The Year That Rocked Irish Dancing, CLRG's update. If more updates become available, I will share them as they come out. All right. So today we are welcoming Scott Doherty to the podcast. Thank you, Scott, for all of your time.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for asking me to come on.
And most people might know Scott from winning the senior men's title at the World Championships in 2009, but he does so much more than that. So Scott, if someone is not familiar with you and what you do, give us a little overview of your dance career and what you're up to now.
Yeah. Oh boy. That's there's a lot there. So as you mentioned, I won the Worlds in 2009. I'm a proud New Englander that grew up born and raised and competed my whole life in New England, danced for O'Shea Chaplin Academy of Irish Dance in Boston. And I have also been lucky enough to tour the world with Riverdance, Lord of the Dance, Gale Force. I was at Busch Gardens for about 12 years, a whole bunch of other shows that I'm trying to struggle to remember all their names as well. And eventually I ended up making my own company with my best friend here in Williamsburg, Virginia. And we create our own shows to tour and do a lot of work creating shows for theme parks as well right now. And recently I've really leaned into realizing that my greatest love in the dance world is helping dancers with their mindset. So I've always taught that way, but I've really kind of tried to capitalize on helping, especially now that everything's online too after COVID. I do a lot of mindset coaching for dancers all over the world, and I'm absolutely loving it.
Yeah, it's such a great thing that you're doing. And if you don't already follow Scott on Instagram, I will put his handle in the show notes of this episode. He posts so much great, you know, sometimes it's just like selfie video, you know, kind of like thoughts of the moment things that I think are really important for dancers to hear, and also just great like tips and tricks and tools. And I know there's a great stamina one that you posted in the last like couple months that it made me think differently. And I kind of brought that into my class that night.
Oh, cool.
And it helped the dancers think differently, which is awesome. And one thing I think that people know about you now that maybe they didn't know about you going into your world championship win is that you talked about how much of a glow up you had to make that happen. kind of going from like the back of the pack to the ultimate champion. You were super, super vocal about that story. And if anyone doesn't know it, can you give like the shortened version?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's one of those things that I used to look back on it with regret, thinking, I wish I had woken up earlier or figured it out earlier when I was younger. I wonder what I could have done, but really now I'm so grateful, because what makes my journey so unique is that I figured it out when I was older. So I remember literally going from like terrible to becoming a world champ in less than 5 years. And we all have these views on the best of the best. And we just think, well, they're born that way, or they're just some freak of nature that I could never do that. And I love sharing my story because it's literal proof that that's not true. That's not the only way to get there. So the quick version is I was pretty terrible at Irish dance my whole life. And I didn't go to my first international competition until I was a senior in high school. I started dancing when I was six. I didn't start when I was late. And there's no such thing as late anyways, but I danced my whole life. I was not very good. I thought I was, but I wasn't. I went and got second last at my first All-Irelands, which is kind of hard to do in a boys competition back in 2004. So like that can kind of gauge where I was. Went to that Worlds and did not recall or get close to it, even though I danced well for me at the time. But the conversation I had with my teacher the night before, Attracta Quinn, I don't know if you would remember Attracta. She changed my life several times. She's great inspiration of mine, along with all my teachers. She was telling me that compared to all the other dancers I was walking, because I was just complaining. I was a punk. Like, I don't understand. Like, it must be our school or our choreo or whatever. She's like, no, it's because compared to what you could be doing, you're walking. And I shrug it off, whatever. Didn't recall, and I stayed to watch the results, and it changed my life because I realized the guy that won, his teachers were doing our workshops. He won with the same steps as me. And then I found out it was his fourth time winning. So I now describe it as it's my Taylor Swift moment of, oh, it's me. I'm the problem.
Yeah.
It's me. So I literally had that like come to Jesus moment. And I promised myself while watching that award ceremony, anytime from there forward, if I'm dancing, I'm all in or nothing, just trying as hard as I possibly can. And the very next year, I got sixth in the world at the Worlds. And then
that in and of itself is incredible.
I literally look back and I'm like, I don't understand how that was possible. I'm in disbelief still.
Yeah.
Because I had no idea. I literally showed up thinking I was hopefully going to do a little bit better. And then I got sixth. It was nuts.
That probably gave you the encouragement to like keep going with it then too.
100%. It was like, oh, this works.
Yeah.
I love celebrating dancers whenever they do something and it works, because if you see that, then you're going to be more willing to do it. So then I like tripled down on that. Funny enough, I'm one of the ones that I was touring in shows for years before I won anything. It wasn't the other way around. A lot of people think you need to be a world champ to get into shows. Nope.
Yeah. Very good point for the dancers that I know listen to the show.
Absolutely. It's just not true. Obviously, like, it'll help, but it'll help you get you the audition or the interview, but that's not what gets you the job. And so I actually didn't care that much about competing for the next couple of years. I was touring, I was loving life, and for some reason something clicked in my brain. Actually, I know what it was. My friends on tour, big shout out to Owen Barrington and Nick Jensen, two of my best roommates in Riverdance. Every day they told me, Scott, you could win anything. And I was like, absolutely not. And they finally said it enough that I started believing it. And I decided I was going to do anything it took to win the Worlds. And in 5 years, 2009, I ended up winning the Worlds the first time it was in America, which was a really cool moment as an American.
I mean, that was my second ever World Championships. I didn't even really know, you know, a whole lot about the international dance scene at the time. So I didn't even appreciate how incredible it was that you and Ashley Smith, both from New England, won that year while it was,
so cool.
You know, first time in the United States.
Yeah. I'm getting chills just thinking about it. It was a dream come true for both of us. And it was really cool too, because when she won, I had already been done for a couple hours, and they came to us and said, hey, this is such a big deal, two New England winners. Would you mind dancing?
And that's still on YouTube. I mean, that's like an iconic YouTube video too.
And not that we started it, because like we didn't start any Parade of Champs or anything like that. But I love that the winners of seniors dance every year at Worlds now too. It's so cool. And Ashley's one of my best friends in the world. When I started my show, she was my first call. It's been a very cool journey, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I mean, and you kind of led that off with talking about how, you know, you thought it was going to be like your biggest regret of like, why didn't I figure this out sooner? And I think that stuck with me. I was a little bit of a late bloomer too. And you think of, you know, oh, like what else could I have done if I had just done it sooner? But I think that's the whole thing, that everyone gets there in their own time.
There's no one path or journey, and there's no such thing as starting late. I know dancers that started when they were 14 or 15, and they have achieved more than most dancers ever.
Yeah.
I know dancers like me that started early, but didn't figure it out or wake up or anything. And I can pinpoint several moments in my life that it woke me up, because it really does. It does come down to believing that you can do it.
Yeah, for sure.
I wanted to be in Lord of the Dance my entire life. I never thought it was possible. Like, that's such a pipe dream. This kid from Boston could never do that. My brother just sent in back then a VHS to Lord of the Dance, and they were casting for their world tour of Feet of Flames, and he got in. And that's one of the things that woke me up. It's like, wait, that's possible? So then I literally started trying. Still wasn't taking it that seriously, because I didn't believe in myself. But then that conversation at that Worlds just changed my life. It made me realize that it wasn't just believing myself or not. What I was having to actually do with my body and my legs, I needed to change what I was doing, not just knowing or believing. And
Yeah.
that's kind of how I work with dancers in general. It's all about actionable advice. Not, I don't subscribe to like, oh, just believe in yourself and like be positive. And that's not real advice.
Right,
It's
you need
important.
action behind
Yeah, we need to know
thought.
how. How do we get these things done? And something I love, I can't talk about winning the worlds without mentioning that. While I was in all those shows, I sat down with every world champ I could find, and I said, "Tell me your story. Just tell me how you went from not winning to winning." And I just looked for patterns. That's all it was. And then I just did what they told me, and it worked. So
Yeah,
now
I
I'm
mean, and
literally
it's
on a
funny you
campaign
mentioned
of,
that.
"Hey, everybody do that."
My thesis in college, most people that listen know I'm a University of Limerick Irish music and dance graduate. And my thesis in college was talking to six different world champions, all 18 and over, and figuring out like what their secrets to success was. And my 21-year-old mind was blown when I discovered that everyone was doing just what everyone else was doing in regards to how they trained, how they cross-trained, what they ate, how much they slept, if they went out. And the only place where they were 100% superior to everyone else was in their mindset and their mental game. And
Entirely.
that was transformational for me.
Yep. I like once again chills hearing you say that. It's
Yeah.
so true. And that's once again, that was one of the biggest things that I got from it as well, because there was no one way to get there in terms of like, oh, you need to only eat these things, or you need to make sure you're always getting 8 hours of sleep. You need to
Yeah.
stretch, because everyone's strengths and weaknesses are going to be unique to yourself. So you need to work on whatever you need to work on. Some people can train really well not sleeping as much as others. Some people need it,
Yep.
but it was the mindset of what you were actually trying to do with your body, and how you faced challenges and all that. It's just, it's I've actually recently decided I'm going to write a book around those conversations. I'm going
Oh,
to, I don't
I will
know
be your
when or
first
how, but
customer.
it's just so important to, but I truly believe that if you've ever heard that saying of, we're just standing on the shoulders of giants, and that's how we can see so far. And that's so many of my colleagues and friends that I've talked to, and so many of the teachers and dancers that have come before us. It's just, that's, to me, I'm just echoing. I'm just the megaphone
Yeah.
saying all the things that they've said.
Amazing. I mean, so you talked about a lot of the shifts that you personally made inside your head and, you know, what you decided to do to make your goal happen. A lot of the people that listen to the podcast are teachers or people that work with dancers, try and help them achieve their goals. You grew up with incredible teachers, Lisa and Rita and their whole staff, long legacy of incredible male dancers too, which I think is really cool. What role did your teachers play in supporting you through, I guess, not only your success, but also kind of, you know, they were obviously super patient and believed in you even from the time you were quote unquote terrible.
You just nailed it. Like, I can't talk about that whole process without the word patience, because yeah, it might be incredible that I went all in, and in 1 year I went from pretty much second last to sixth in the world. But do you think I just started trying harder and all of a sudden I was amazing right away? That's not even a little. I was worse. Like, I was not a good dancer, terrible technique and all these things, and I was just trying harder and going bigger. There's it absolutely took about a year for all the puzzle pieces to fall into place, and I do not remember one time them discouraging me for trying too hard or going too big or anything like that. It's I'm so grateful that they had the patience to kind of like watch the process and allow me to fail. And
Yeah, and that
that's
is
what I
a
think.
huge part of the process. And I think a huge part of being
Right?
a teacher is seeing the path to the end or seeing the path before the dancer really sees it.
Yes,
So, for all
it's
you know, they saw that path for a long time and were just kind of waiting for you to get on it.
that seriously, like it's not that they believed it or saw it, like, because it's one thing to be able to see the future. But they knew it was possible, and that's a big thing that I try to get into anyone that I work with. It's not about believing it's possible technically. You have to know that it's not impossible. There's a difference.
That's a
And
great
a lot of
reframe.
people think it's the same. Like people think it's the same, but you can't believe something until you see it. Like that's not, you can have blind faith and that's fantastic. But if you don't, if you think it's impossible, you're not even going to attempt it. And what I try to reframe dancers, once again, just echoing what my teachers helped me do, is can we look big picture about where we're trying to go? And can we start working on that now instead of the competition right in front of you? If you're about to do the Oireachtas and it's your last competition ever, that's a different conversation. But if you're going to continue dancing for a while, like if you want to win the Oireachtas or win the Nationals, let's start working on that now, knowing we're going to be pretty bad at it right away. And that has to be okay, but can we skip a few steps and aim for what we're trying to do instead of I'm trying to be as good as I can this week or for this fesh? Or even there's some dancers I'm talking to that they're all in with the mindset of it. So we literally are saying, hey, it doesn't even matter what you get at this Oireachtas if you end up winning next year.
Yeah, and that's actually really that true, that it's okay to play the long game.
I don't know anyone that's achieved greatness in anything that isn't playing the long game.
Yep.
So the biggest part there is allowing yourself to fail. And it's, especially with where we are in Irish dance now, because even when I was dancing, it was athletic and difficult. Oh my goodness. It's 10 times now.
Yeah. The bar keeps getting raised again and again.
Seriously. So if we're not, I call it skill stacking, like stacking the skills in a certain order, we need to be dancing crazy and athletic before we worry about technique. Because if you do technique first, then go for crazy athletic, all the technique's gone. So we need to do athletic first, and which looks and feels horrible at first. And that has to be okay, because once you're dancing at that crazy athletic level and that's a habit, then we polish. And it's all those things. And my teachers, oh my goodness, they were really, really patient with me, but also super strict. They also gave me the, like, you either dance this way or it's wrong. And that really helped me. It wasn't like degrees of like, oh, well, that's better. It was, trust me, when I say they were allowing me to fail, they weren't not telling me all the things I was doing wrong.
Yeah.
They just weren't discouraging me. They
yeah.
were absolutely making sure that, in Rita O'Shea, the amount of times I heard, you're not dancing like that under my name. And it was just one of the, and she was right. And Lisa, her daughter, doesn't get enough credit either, because every single class, I remember motivational speeches. She would sit down and talk with us. We would talk about, like, not only just how to handle the day or how to handle yourself on stage, but it's just, she's where it started for me. Just how the mental game and how much it mattered. It was instrumental in my entire journey.
Yeah. As a teacher myself, I feel like it is an important part of the process of, you know, you do all this work in class, but everyone has those dancers that either really rise to the occasion at a competition or they completely shrink, and giving them the tools or even preparing them for how that might be at their first Oireachtas or whatever it is so important. You were telling me a story before we hit record about the dinner dance and Rita, and we were talking, you know, just before we hit record about that dancers and the skills we acquire through doing this our whole life, you know, you go back and realize as an adult that it's really life skills that you've learned. You want to tell that story?
Oh, geez. Yeah. And it's one of those things that I've really kind of accepted that dance advice is life advice, and it vice versa, because there's anything that's going to affect you in life is going to affect you in dance, and vice versa. If it's nerves, anxiousness, like whatever, doubts and beliefs. So we kind of forget that we spend so much time in class that we're learning life skills all the time, discipline, respect, how to handle challenges, how so many things. And I'll never forget, Rita was being honored at the New England Oireachtas dinner dance, and she gave this whole speech. She didn't really talk about dancing. She talked about how important the community was, and that when teaching dancers, we're really like working on life skills and all those things like discipline, respect, how to believe in yourself, work hard. And I forget what age I was, but I was just at first, I'm like, this is the lady that's just been yelling at me to turn my feet out for my whole, what is she talking about? But by the end of the speech, I was like tears in my eyes. I'm like, oh my gosh, she's right. She taught me, like I learned all these things from her and Lisa, the other teachers. And obviously I've come from a great family. I'm very lucky. But Irish dance taught me to a different level than I never would have experienced in almost any other activity. And I'm so grateful for it, but my goodness, is it's almost a disservice to ourselves to forget that that's what we're doing as dancers and teachers. It's just that it's so important that that's what we're learning.
Yeah, I
Life
love
skills.
that. I love
It's
that.
wild. I remember just being shocked. I was like, yeah, sure. Like this, she's talking about community and all these things that you sell. She just yells at me to point my toes.
Yeah.
But then by the end, I was like, oh my God, I do actually have all these things that she taught me. Wow. And I'm
And
a better human because of Irish dance.
that reminds me of one of your other really great posts that you made on Instagram that I know Christian and I both took notice of was O'Shea Chaplin also has a really great legacy of being a great Kaylee school. And I imagine that you also grew up Kaylee dancing with your team and you know how important that is at O'Shea Chaplin. And one of the posts you made was, you know, a great solo dancer isn't always a great team dancer. And you know, team skills translate into solo skills. And like who couldn't use more, you know, turnout and up in the back and lift and
Absolutely. Jeez, it's so true. It's the I think it was probably teams, friends, and St. Patrick's Day shows that kept me dancing for my entire career because it wasn't solo success, that's for sure. But it like yeah, I'm surprised I didn't quit, but it was because I genuinely enjoyed those things so much. We would have full like 5 hour Saturday classes where we're just doing, and it was such a big school at the time that we would have a full basketball court and more of four hands and just
Yep.
running it for hours and hours and hours. And I'm like to kind of put this boldly too for shows. Anyone in shows will tell you a lot of times, like some of the world champs that come in or like the big time competitive dancers, at least at first, are the worst ones. Because prioritizing the wrong things. I know I was when I first, and I didn't consider myself amazing in competition, but like I joined Riverdance, I was terrible. Like I was trying to be the best Irish dancer on the stage. And everyone was like, hey, stop doing that. It doesn't
Yeah.
matter. Like that's, you're already above the line of good enough. Can you smile? Can you hold yourself? Can you stay in line? Can you, all this. And I learned all those things that all the skills I had from teams had led me to being a better performer, a better dancer, all these things. I actually now, while hiring dancers, I love seeing teams on people's resume
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
that's a whole
It's
set of skills.
training a whole different skill set.
Yeah. And it's also, you have, in order to be a good teams dancer, you have to be selfless. You cannot prioritize yourself and what you want to do. Oh, I'm going to do the biggest hop back two threes. Great. Nobody else is. So you
Right.
look weird.
Yep.
It's one of those things that doesn't, oh, but I did them the best dance wise. That's not what we're trying to do here. You actually look bad.
Yep.
So it's one of those things that it really helps shift your mindset into not being a selfish dancer.
Yeah. Oh,
It's
I love it.
wild. The amount of things that one of my favorite ones that Lisa did to me, it was like 2 weeks before the Worlds, and we were all the older kids were in a line and we were doing St. Patrick's Day to the like slower St. Patrick's Day. And she was just hounding us older kids going back and forth. You have to do this properly. Do the proper technique. Show all the little ones behind you. You're the example. You're the example. And I was so angry in the moment. I was like, I'm trying to win the worlds in about 2 weeks. Why the hell are we doing this? And it took me a while to realize, you know what? She wasn't doing that for the little ones.
Right, it was
She
for
was doing
you.
that for
Yeah.
me. It was actually for me. I was like, oh my. Oh my goodness. So like Jedi mind tricked me into dancing better and prioritizing what I needed to prioritize in the moment. And it's just things like that and teams, it's about reframing your priorities.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. It all starts with the mind.
Yep, and you're never too good for those basics.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, no. And you mentioned a couple times about the legacy of great guy dancers at O'Shea Chaplin. And I love pointing this out because it is not because of me, that's for sure, because it started way before me with other guys, my brother.
Yeah, it's as long as I can remember. I think as long as I've been dancing, if not earlier than that.
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is, since I won the Worlds in 2009, which like at this point was a while ago, Oshie Chapman has had at least one boy in the top five at Worlds every single year. That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, that's absolutely insane because it's been a while, different ages, like literally little ones when I was there that are now like Aiden Herf, current world champion. Unbelievable. I remember teaching him when I came back after I was done competing. And it's not because of me, but because I also, when I was competing, I was so lucky. I had Connor O'Brien and Kevin McCormick. The three of us were pushing each other and challenging each other. Could we do more? Could we work harder? Do all these things? But it's really hard to believe what's possible if you don't see it in front of yourself. And it's so clear to me that Oshie Chapman, it's just like there's always been a boy that went from not unbelievable to top five in the world. And the other boys will just see that and just go, okay, well, like if I work like that, I just do these things, that's possible. And it's just been a snowball effect for years now. And I actually love going back because even my cousin still dances for Oshie Chapman. And I challenge her. I challenge all the girls. I'm like, why can't you do that?
Yeah.
Like, if you have the same teachers. Like, obviously, it's different formats. Sometimes it's boys. There's less boys, so get a little bit more attention. But in terms of even attempting to do that, I'm like, are you guys trying as hard as Aiden is?
Yeah.
They're like, well, no. I'm like, then what are we talking about? And it's like I said, everyone is responsible for their own success because you choose or don't choose to pay attention and do it. And oh my goodness, like Aiden Herf right now is
yeah, incredible.
Unbelievable. What's funny is he's known for kicking his face with the straightest legs in the world.
Yep.
He was
and
not
pointed
flexible.
Feet.
Like everyone, yeah, right? Everyone thinks he was born that way. Not even a little bit. He worked so hard. Actually, last time I visited class, Lisa said to me and Kevin McCormick, who's an All-Ireland champ, like, you guys, some of the hardest workers I know. Aiden probably works harder than both of you combined. And both myself and Kevin were like, yeah, obviously. Look at him. Like, it's just, yeah. But I actually, talking about the whole patience and fail thing too, I was back there. I visited last August. So not this past one, last August. And what I saw from him was I knew he was going to win the Worlds because he didn't look that good. And that's so backwards to say. Obviously, he still looked very good. It's Aiden. But he wasn't trying to look good for that week or that class.
Right.
He was in building mode trying
Peaking
to
for April.
Win the Worlds. Yes. And I saw him, and I saw him literally in workshop mode, building mode. And I had no doubt in my mind from that moment forward. I'm like, that guy's going to win the world. That's if we're not working that way, then what are we doing?
Yeah, no, I love it. I love hearing everyone's different approaches to teaching and everything too.
Oh, it makes all of us better.
Like, yeah.
The more voices, the more everything is better. That's why. That's also why I don't have my TCRG, because I love being able to run around to schools all over the country doing workshops and helping. Even with the mindset, it just kind of clears the way for there not to be any conflicts.
Yeah, for
I
what
understand
you're
the
doing,
conflicts.
It helps you serve more people, actually, than if you were.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so unfortunate we have the rules that we have. I completely understand them. But it's just, I just think the more help, the more eyes, the more voices, the better. Because
I agree.
If you have a panel of five judges, there's five different opinions.
Right. They're all
so
looking
like,
for something a little different.
Yeah. And I was so fortunate at Oshie Chapman at times we had a whole bunch of teachers that had come back that were previous dancers, and everyone had different opinions of like what we could do better. And it made me a more well-rounded dancer, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we covered a lot of, you know, teaching content, dancer content, but what I really wanted to talk to Scott about was, you know, he went on his own business venture by starting a production company, which is definitely an unconventional move. And we were talking before we started recording about there is no one pathway, even though we're kind of led to believe that you either become a TC or you go tour in a show, or, you know, a lot of people stay socially connected to Irish dancing, but they otherwise move on with their life, go into a different career. And Scott's done none of that. So what led you to starting your own production company? Because that's a big move.
Yeah, it's once again, a dream I had my entire life. Never thought it was possible. It was one of those things like that would be very cool to do. I loved choreographing. I loved doing things, either me and my friends, having input on the different shows that I was in when we got some freedom. But it was one of those things that, and I always planned on taking my TC and probably starting my own school. That was the plan, because once again, that's kind of like the if you want to stick with Irish dance, that's the route that,
yep,
the most natural route. But I had moved into, it's actually the same house I'm in now, with my buddy who's a drummer, and we started going to the gym together, and we started talking about how we both had these like dreams of making a rock and roll Irish show. And obviously I was coming from the dancing, he's a drummer, he had toured with like world renowned Irish bands. And we just started talking about all the ideas, and we were bouncing ideas off each other. We're in line. One of the biggest things, if anyone always asks advice too, I can't talk about any of this without saying, it's all about the people. And I tried to make as many connections and learn as much as I could from all my years of touring Riverdance, Lord of the Dance, every show I was in, because first of all, you should just treat people well, regardless of what job they're doing, not just the dancers. But I was doing that without knowing I had a plan of making a show.
Yeah.
But I learned so much. And then we were talking about, okay, well, we could use these people, we know these singers, and like for the lights, we have these friends, and this person could help us with logistics. And we literally, after talking for months, we realized we had the entire show planned. And it was one of those moments that we looked at each other and we're like, oh, damn, we have to do this, don't we? And like, once again, it was never an actual plan. We just like, we're dreaming up, and we just looked at each other, we have to do this. We went home that day, called around to theaters, and we booked a theater for a year in advance. We had absolutely no idea how we were going to pull it off.
But you had your deadline. Ourselves
a deadline. Yep, exactly. That's, if you need to get anything done, give yourself a deadline. And then we just got to work, and we did it, and we loved it. And we're like, that was awesome. And we wanted to do more. We did some tours. It kind of blew up. And we did an opening weekend of three shows. Then we did a mini tester tour of three shows. And then our first tour, we did a 70 city national tour. And it was absolutely insane. We got connected to an awesome director who connected us to Broadway lighting and sound people. And we had an amazing team, learned so much from them. And we're like, yeah, cool, this is our show, we did this, great. And then we started dreaming about other ideas. And
yeah,
we had one for a Christmas show. So we made our Christmas show in 2018, debuted it there. We did our first national tour in 2021, like still in COVID times. It, like, surprisingly, no one got sick and nothing got canceled. It went very well. And then this year we're 2 weeks away from starting rehearsals for our second national tour for Christmas in Killarney. And we're expecting a great tour. It's a really fun show. On top of being super busy, we now work with theme parks all over the country, creating shows and consulting, doing all sorts of entertainment for them as well. And it's literally went from having no plans to do this to making one show. And now we have a production company that we are hiring dozens of people every year and working on every side of entertainment in theme parks and our own national tours.
That's amazing.
It's one of those things. It's, once again, I never thought this is what I was going to be doing or that this was possible. But when we got to work, we knew it wasn't impossible. That's for sure. And I don't know how you feel with your ventures, but we look back now and we think if we knew exactly how hard it was going to be,
mm-hmm,
I don't think we would have.
Well, started. And it's interesting you say that, because I feel like, you know, a lot of people have dreams, whatever they are, but they never actually go for them because they're afraid of what they don't know. And for me, I always say, you know, I'm really glad I started my business when I was 22 because I was so naive that if I knew what I knew now, I would have probably been like, oh my gosh, yeah, no, that's way too hard, or oh no. But it's kind of like what happened with you guys, where you're just like, all right, well, we're just going to go for it. And like, we're going to see what happens. We kind of have our village of people. Like, we think we, you know, kind of have enough together. And what I always tell myself and other people now is, you know, you might not have all the answers. You might not know all the things you need to know, but someone does. Yeah. And as long as you can find that person, that resource, that connection that can kind of get you through that, you're going to be okay.
Absolutely. I love reframing what we think are negatives sometimes. For both of us, it's obvious that what we didn't know, us not knowing things actually served us well, because had we known, who knows if we would have taken that chance and worked on it. And yeah, there's so many people that do act like it's like trade secrets, or like they can't like I don't bother with those people, but there's so many great people that want to share knowledge, want to share, hey, these are some tips or tricks. These are shortcuts. These are things to look out for. And we're like that with our companies and all of that. Plus I love talking with professionals and dancers and teachers that are open about this type of stuff.
Yeah.
Because we all struggle.
I don't think trade secrets do anyone any good.
No one. If there are more dance schools thriving, that's better for Irish dance in general.
Especially now.
Competition is good for everything. Like, win or lose, I'm not talking about Irish dance competition, business competition.
Yep.
Some things need to fail in order to make the industry and everything better.
Yes.
And that has to be okay. And that doesn't mean you failed. It's just.
Right. And also, failure is not the end of the world.
Oh, it's not. It's like, that's, oh my goodness. What the biggest thing we've learned is all of our failures. And now we know what not to do. It's one of those things. Even looking around, in the shows that I was in before we started our own, we probably learned more about what not to do than
and
what to do.
I felt the same way starting. I think I've said this on the past podcast. I'm sure I have in telling my story in some of the early episodes. I've had a Google document on my desktop computer since I was 12 years old of what my dream studio was going to be. And in that list, I had a what not to do list. And it was just notes I took and things I saw that I was like, you know what? Don't ever do that. Or no, not that one.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so cool. That's first of all, that since you were 12, that's so cool. I love hearing anyone too that did have dreams or goals and they pursued them, whether it worked or not, just that they actually pursued them.
Right. Doing it is a big deal.
Oh, big time. But you having that list and having the wherewithal to actually write that down of things not to do, whether it was your own personal preferences or literally don't do this because that's not going to work or it's going to harm things. That's awesome.
Yeah, one day I'm going to dig up that document and then my Scott Doherty VHS tape of one of my first set dances.
That's amazing. Yeah, when you told me that one of your first set dances came from me, I instantly was brought back to stopping by and working on that at your school.
Yeah,
and that's so funny. I completely forgot about that. That's cool.
So, what were some of those challenges? Because it is a business podcast after all. We're here to learn. I guess many people listening may or may not have the same dream of, starting a production company, but I think it's still worth talking about those challenges. And then obviously you were able to overcome them because you're still doing it. And, another tour is about to start.
Right. It's, and to anyone that wants to create live entertainment or any form of entertainment, there are so many outlets that you might look at a big show and say I can't do that. I don't either have the money or the connections or this and that. Okay. Can you make something smaller? Because whether it's at a theme park or a local venue, even putting together Irish dance entertainment and musicians for local bars around March, there's so many levels to it that there's absolutely something that you can achieve in doing it. And then you just build from there if you decide to, or you can make that your bread and butter too. We do things from massive 70 city national tours to a 3-person drumming show that'll be at a small theme park in Kentucky for a month. And it's it's not definitely not the same.
Yeah.
But all the things what we've learned applies regardless. Now, one of the biggest ones specific to this, and it's actually not specific to this, but in any business, what we've learned is it's all about people and connections. And don't get me wrong, I love people and I love connections. In terms of success in business, I hate that, because like, we make good shows, great. Why aren't they just succeeding? It's because like, any great success that we've had has come from a personal connection and people, not just favors, but just meeting people and making connections and going to conferences and all of that, instead of just, yeah, we make really great products. And I was like, cool, but like, I don't know who you are, or like, I don't right. trust you. I don't, like, it's all about people. And especially in the theater world, what we realized was it doesn't actually make sense whether or not you make a good show or not, because there's two ways to do it. One, you rent a theater and then you have to sell all the tickets. It's all on you, which if you're doing it locally, fantastic, because you know the area. We try to do that a few times on tour in states and cities that we have no idea about, and it was a crapshoot. One, we would do a marketing campaign in one city that would sell out the show literally next night, different city, empty. And it's just one of those things that we didn't know. Or the better way to do it in the theater industry is the theater will buy your show for a guaranteed pay. It's called a guarantee.
Yep.
And then they have to sell the tickets. And you can work in bonuses and things like that, but really it's on them, because they spent the money. It's on them to make their money back. And because they know their
right.
own
so
market.
Right, so it's in their best interest to run a good marketing campaign and get butts in seats.
Yeah, and they are doing that all year round. So they're buying marketing in bulk. They know where to go, what to do, what works. Whereas when you do it yourself, it's just kind of like, I hope this works. Just throwing darts at a dartboard. So who you're actually marketing to is the theater. They like you need numbers of sales, of course. That's going to be true anywhere. But is the show going to cost them a lot of money to put on? Like for Rock and Road, it was a big, expensive show. So like, we needed like big theaters. We needed like a ton of crew, all these people. And especially when we're doing that every single night, because we're not doing sit downs with Riverdance. That adds up for theater. They have to do it every single night, like every morning, every night. It costs a lot of money. So what we learned, like what we changed for this Christmas show, is we've built this show to be able to fit anywhere, and it kind of runs itself. And we don't really need to have too much crew or any staffing from the theater. It's not going to cost them almost anything. They can just buy, because think about it, if they buy a show, that's not just their costs covered. They're also paying whatever technicians they have to, like all the hands to load in the show, load out the show. If they don't need to do that, they don't need to pay those people. So we literally created a Christmas show, one, to not have to have those big costs, but also we can also play in like smaller, medium theaters as well, because we designed the staging of the show. But also there's no consistency theater to theater in the entire country. It's wild. Like, there's no just standard of things, maybe the biggest Broadway houses, but other than that, there's no standard. Everyone's different. We designed this show so that we can get the entire set and everything we need through a doorway.
Amazing.
So like, we don't need
a
big truck. It's because we realized there's one theater that, and everyone that's been there knows this theater. I forget where it is, but their loading dock is 12 feet in the air. So you have to put everything onto one pallet and a forklift picks it up. And then it's the slowest process. It works for them. It can be, if you don't plan ahead, a nightmare.
And this is where do it scared, do it messy, but get it started.
Yes.
Pays off, because you can't know everything. You're never going to know everything you need to know, but you can improve it once you know those things.
Yes. And we actually have a rule in our company that we've adopted from other companies, seeing it go badly. If we even think the thought or say out loud, that would never happen, we stop what we're doing and we create a plan for that very thing. And because it's just one of the universal laws, if you think it's not going to happen, it's probably going to happen. And I mean, if it doesn't happen, great. We had a plan. It's like not, and the same thing, I work with a dancer to do the same thing. We like, yeah, it's probably unlikely to happen, but in case it does, let's have a plan just in case.
Yeah.
You're going to feel better just by having the plan. And then if it actually does, because
you're
we
prepared.
All have good days, bad days, you're prepared either way. Like, once again, dance advice, life advice, business advice. It's all the same.
Now, have you had a situation that you, maybe before you had this rule, that you did not anticipate or did not plan for and had to really problem solve hard in the moment to figure it out?
Yes. I mean, several, because you can't anticipate everything when you don't know. And things would pop up that in our heads that we're like, well, that's not a normal thing for this industry or this thing. Like, right? That's not a thing. One of the biggest ones that we never even crossed our minds, actually, it was that same theater, funny enough, that had that on the way in the morning. One of our buses broke down, like the crew bus broke down. So then we had three buses on tour, three sleeper buses and a tractor trailer. And then, so people just got off the bus, got onto one of the other buses. We kept going. Then one of those buses broke down. And then the tow truck that was towing the buses broke down. So we literally had, like, we didn't have enough room to get everybody on. Our bus was going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And what was so funny is on a sleeper bus, you don't, as long as it's still going, you just assume it's like 6 a.m. because you're just in like a little cocoon. And like, oh, the bus is still moving. So it's probably, I don't even check my phone. I got a call from our business manager who's back in Virginia. And he's like, hey, can you and Chris like just get up and go into the theater and like see what they need, see if you can help in any way? And I was like, what are you talking about? Because our bus was the one bus still going and it was going back. I was still asleep. And he's like, you have no idea what's happening to you. So he explained it. So got up, the bus was going back and forth. And so we had to basically prioritize, what do we need to do for this show to make it even happen? We don't need to, like, sure, we might not be able to do everything we want, but we will not be able to get this show done if we try to do it that way. So we, on the fly, had to talk with our team and say, okay, we absolutely need to do this. One of the things that worked in our favor, thank God, was that theater was, it's a hemp house, which means it's all ropes. It's not cables and things like that. It's all ropes, like very old school. And we were traveling with massive, heavy lights that were already pre-installed onto big trussing. And their ropes would not have, like, it literally couldn't have held those lights. So we had to cut all of our lighting and only use what they had. So that saved us a whole bunch of time.
Yeah.
Because we might have had to do that anyway. But once again, like I said, there's no standard theater to theater. That was in none of their paperwork. We had no idea. So it helped us, but at the same time, it wasn't just that. We had to prioritize what we're doing with the schedule of the day, breaks for the crew, when we're even doing lineup, all these things. It's the epitome of the show must go on.
Yep.
But no one really talks about the how. The how is like, you need to prioritize correctly because you're not going to be able to do it ideal. It has to be okay that it's not ideal as long as we get it done. Once again,
I think everyone can relate to that in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
You have to let the perfectionism go, and you know,
it's so hard with dancers. Every day I work with them, that it's just, we create these plans and they're like getting anxious and antsy. I can see their body language, like their shoulders are like in, like, ah. I'm like, oh, sorry, just so you know, I don't need you to like this plan, I just need you to have it in place just in case. Like, your plan, we need a plan A and plan B. Like, I'm afraid I'm not going to wake up in time. Great. So the plan A is obviously set 17 alarms.
Yeah.
Plan B, what do you do if it actually happens? I don't need you to like this.
Yeah.
But we need to know what to do so that, because on the day, in the moment of panic, no one's going to be good at problem solving. No one.
Yeah.
So we need to problem solve ahead of time. So then, like, literally we have it written down. Like, okay, this is happening. I just do X, Y, Z. This is like, that's, I'm a big, I truly believe, like we were saying earlier, about turning a negative into something that we can use. I'm a huge overthinker, like massive. And I truly believe if you like rein it in to be useful, it becomes a superpower. And it's just one of those things, but that, like, anything that we see as a weakness in terms of our mind, whether it's being anxious or fears or overthinking, if we use it correctly, oh my goodness, it is absolutely a superpower. So I use
Yeah, the
that every
mind is
single day
just
with
incredible in general, right?
right?
Like,
It's a supercomputer. It
can
really
make or
is.
break you so
100%.
quick.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's all of these, like, I don't like the general advice, but some of the cheesiest advice, it's so true. It's just like, whether you think you can or you can't,
You're
you're
right.
right.
Yep.
Absolutely. It's wild. My friend that I said earlier, Nick Jensen, he's the first person I ever told, I'm going to do whatever it takes to win the world championships. And he's someone that to this day, even when we're talking about jokes, like I will say, like, oh, well, I can't do that. He's like, not with that attitude. Is that it? Not even serious half the time, but he will say that whether it's serious or not every single time.
Well,
And
your
it's
brain
like,
is listening.
it seriously, it
Yep.
just, it sinks in. And that's why I truly believe it. You don't need to 100% believe it. You just need to know that it's not impossible and
I'm
then
going
take
to
the
start
first step.
using that. That's like my big takeaway. I don't know what everyone else's takeaway is listening to that, but I'm definitely taking that away today.
Yeah, it's one of those things, because like, and to have like a back tested actual example of it is, do you think when I went from second last to sixth in the world, I knew I was dancing at a top 10 in the world level? I had no idea what I was doing. I was just every day, can I do more? Can I do more? Can I work harder? Can I do more? And I got there and I was just like, I genuinely remember, I hope I get closer to recalling. That'd be really cool. And then all of a sudden I'm literally like at the top of the mountain looking around like, how did I get here?
Because you
And
had your head down and you were dialed into just you, which I think for
exactly.
a lot of dancers is the hardest part, to get rid of that outside noise and worrying about what everyone else is doing and just to focus
Yes.
on you.
Yes. Every, it's so funny. Since the Nationals this year, I've come up with better ways to explain what I do with the mindset coaching. Because I would have dancers, it's one or the other. Someone would come up and say, oh my God, I love what you're doing. I love all your posts. It's like so cool, so important. And then another one, old school, would be like, I don't understand what you're doing. Like, what is this? Like, you're giving advice. I don't, what is this? And I realized this is the best way I can describe it. My job as a mindset coach is to just quiet all the noise in your brain so that you can get back to work. That's it. It's not easy, but it's actually my favorite quote about Irish dance that I make about Irish dance. It's not easy, but it is simple.
And
It's
it's
just,
once you learn how to do it,
that's it.
it's so transformational too. I mean, and
It's
it carries into the rest of
absolutely.
your life.
Oh, big time. It really does. I recently last year started going to therapy myself. I've always been like, everyone should go to therapy, but I never did it myself. But I started. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And like it helps me as be a better person, a better human, better coach, better everything. And I'm passing along. Once again, I'm just the megaphone, I feel
Yep.
like with my teachers, all the champs that I've talked to, all the things I've learned, my own therapist, I'm just like telling more people what I've heard. And then it's just one of those things that like everybody can benefit by once again hearing more examples, more analogies, more whatever. But it all starts from the brain. Everything.
Yep.
Everything in life starts with the brain, whether it's business, dancing, everything.
Absolutely.
It's all
What was
connected.
the tipping point that led you to starting the mindset coaching?
So I honestly, I think it was some feedback from dancers, because I've always taught that way. I've never, like, I'm incapable of teaching without taking the mindset route, because for me, it's all about what you're trying to do. And it's more about the quality of your reps than having more reps. I love when I do workshops, I'll tell my story about going from second last to sixth in the world. And I ask the whole room, like, and I'll ask you, how much do you think I was practicing that year? Like outside of class.
When you were second to last?
Second to last to sixth in the world, like that year that I made that massive jump.
I'm going to guess that you weren't practicing outside of class very much.
At all.
Yeah.
Zero. Zero. No, I mean like when I got sixth in the world.
Oh, okay. So you were just
Yeah.
really optimizing your class time.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Yep.
I didn't have anywhere to practice. Like my house, we didn't have anywhere. And I only had class maybe three times a week.
Yep.
But it was one of those things that every time I was dancing, it was what am I working on? Am I actually trying to fix things? Am I problem solving? Am I doing this, that, whatever? Because the I realized that it was how I was thinking about my dancing, not just trying harder and doing. If the answer was dance more, none of us teachers would even have jobs. Like,
Right.
it would just be like, okay, just you got to dance more. And that's definitely, you need more practice. But, and I'm not saying don't work outside of class, but when you
But
are,
it's
like,
always
be
how you're
smarter about it.
spending your time, not how much time
Yes.
you're spending.
100%. And just realizing that I would have these conversations with dancers all the time, and they would come back and they would tell me, like, the success that they're having, not only in dancing, but how it was helping them in life and everything. I had one last private with a dancer I worked with regularly. She was going to her last nationals a couple years ago, and she had left the room. She came back and she's like, "Hey, Scott, I just need to thank you." And I was like, "Yeah, sure, no problem." She's like, no, like, I hear your voice in my head all day, every day." And I was like, "What do you mean?" One of the biggest things I always try to harp on is, hey, don't judge yourself. Like, make an adjustment. Like, judging yourself is, like, my favorite thing to say to dancers. As your friend, I don't want you to judge yourself because I don't want you to feel that way. As your coach, I don't want you to judge yourself because you're wasting time. It's like, you're just wasting time. Like, if you can think about that outside of class, whatever, we should work on that big picture. But in class, it's just not productive. We need to get every second of progress that we can out of class and milk it. And she was saying that she was, like, taking a test or something, and she was, like, beating herself up. She said, stop judging yourself. Just make an adjustment. What am I doing? And I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize that. Like, it was actually, it goes back to the Rita thing where, like,
Yep.
I didn't even realize that, like, these things were passing
Applicable
on.
to the rest of people's lives.
Yeah. And it just kind of snowballed from there, where, like, I would start working and really talk about things more. But a few dancers, like, asked me, it once again kind of fell into it, even though, like, I was doing it, but fell into it where, like, I've heard you've had really great success with, like, doing this and that, like, helping this dancer. We're not around, but would you mind doing, like, FaceTime or something? Like, I would love to. And it's just, I've, like I said earlier, I've realized it's become my greatest passion in dance, because it's the most important. It really
Yeah.
is. Anyone can work hard and push their body into the ground, but if we're not doing it the right way, then it's all that. How many times have we seen dancers, and we've done it ourselves, where, like, on the day even, we just throw it all away because our mind's not in the right place.
Yep.
It's just,
It's
it's
like the
I
saddest thing
took
to watch too, as like a
right.
teacher, like you know how someone can dance and you've seen them work for hours and weeks and months, and then they just fall apart for whatever
It
reason
just,
on stage, and you're just devastated for them.
It's just so sad to see, and it's just so frustrating. And it makes you question, as a dancer, why you're even doing this. So many parents are like, I don't even know why we're still doing this, because they're so distraught. And I'm like, yeah, I understand that feeling for sure. I always say, I'm not, and I'm very upfront about this, I am not certified in any way. I don't have any psychological degrees or anything. I've just been through a lot.
Yeah.
I've experienced it all, and I luckily did it when I was older, and I remember the process. So
Yeah.
I
I
just
think it's a
love.
really important process for dancers to go through too. Like, I can think of kids in my own class that I feel like when they start to get into that early teenage stage, that's when
For
it really
sure.
starts to get harder for them in the
Big
mindset
time.
area. Like they're old enough where they start to realize that they're doing big things and like, oh, I think I have big goals, and oh, okay, that's kind of scary, and like, oh, I don't know about this. Whereas when they're young and they get up and do it and they don't even think about it, and then eventually you get older and you start to rein it in, but that early teenage years are brutal.
It's so
But I think
tough.
it's an important process for kids to go through and trying to figure that out and working through some of those struggles. Like, it's not bad. It's hard to watch sometimes, but
Oh, it's so hard.
it's so
It's so hard.
valuable.
Yeah, but, like, they need to go through it, otherwise how are they going to learn either? So it's like, and we're trying to give them as many answers to the test as we can, but nothing replaces learning yourself. Same thing in business, same
Yep.
thing with all that. Like, learning it yourself, is there's no replacement for that. And those younger dancers sometimes are the same as us starting our business ventures where they're young enough, they don't realize it's supposed to be hard. So like that's why they're running around like, and like, oh my God, how are they doing that? Like, 'cause they don't realize it's hard. Like, don't tell them. Don't tell them it's supposed to be hard. They'll figure it out eventually, but don't tell them yet.
I mean, and this episode is going to air right in the, you know, midst of Arakta season. If you had to give one single most valuable, actionable tip or piece of advice to everyone who's about to step on stage, what would it be?
It's just like I do with everything. I was talking about what I learned from all the world champs. Look for the patterns. So every person, you are the world's leading expert in your brain. You know exactly what's going to happen. You know exactly what you're going to be thinking. If the game plan is, I just really hope I'm not going to get that worked up or nervous this time, that's not a game plan. It's not. Instead of demonizing those fears and thoughts and anxieties, can we accept them and plan for them? Because it's the same thing as stamina. If mindset coaching is very similar to stamina, where it's not fun, but it's work and it has a massive payoff. So like if you are dancing and you're just thinking, so many dancers walk on stage thinking, I hope this is the one time I don't get tired. What? And then when they do get tired, they panic. So they get flustered, they panic and like, oh my God, I must have done something wrong or whatever. I need to like pace myself, all these things. You will never not be tired. Everything that like is going to happen on the day has happened to you 100 times. So
right, like why did you think this time was going to be different sort of thing?
Right. Like you're going to get worked up. If you know that seeing all the dancers warming up in the hall and the practice room really screws with you, don't go into the day hoping it's not going to screw with you that day. You know it's going to. What's the plan? Are we either going to avoid it, or if we can't avoid it, can we prep what you're going to tell yourself so that we can talk ourselves down? Because with that in mind, it's kind of one big picture of best advice for the day. Most of these things are the same fear and anxiety. And we're just copy and pasting them. How many dancers do we see have an absolute meltdown because of hair or makeup? And first of all, that's okay. Like it's going to happen. It's sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't, but like it's one of the most normal things in all of Irish dance. The only thing more normal is when a dancer and their parents are fighting with each other on the day. It's so normal. Like even that, can we plan for it instead of just like, oh, I hope they're not like that to me today. They're going to be. Can we accept it and plan for it? Like just have a conversation with like
your dancer or your parent. Yeah, I told them the same thing.
It's going to happen. It's okay. But like and even teachers and parents struggle to remember that like you guys are stressed and actually have it worse than the dancer because you're just as stressed, if not more, care just as much, if not more, and you have zero control.
Right.
And that is like, so it's such a stress. And like, I know, and we're all human. So sometimes we're not going to problem solve the best when we're all worked up like that. So like if a dancer is having a moment like that, sometimes our knee-jerk reaction, especially parents, is like, you need to cut it out. Like, just stop being a brat, do this. When is that ever going to help with somebody that's upset? But then like, I love telling dancers, whatever it is, let it out. Let it out. Like, if you don't have to be on stage in 30 seconds, let it out. Great. I don't care if you take 30 seconds, 5 minutes, whatever. Let it out. Oh, no, you're crying. Good. Great. We have time to fix your makeup.
Yep.
That's okay. You got to let it out. And then once they do, and they catch their breath, I just say, now, was that really about your makeup? And 10 times out of 10, it's like, no. Like, what are you nervous about going on stage? And it's the same nerves for everything. Like it's one of those, all those things. Yes, they are unique to maybe the Arakis, but you're not that high strung about them until it's the Arakis. So like that tells you it's not about you. It's because you're at the Arakis.
Yeah. It's the environment. It's the pressure.
Yeah, exactly. So can we not copy and paste the same stress and just call it different things all day? Because then by the time you actually go on stage, you're going to be way above that line of stress, and you're going to lose control of your body. And it's just one of those things. That's the week of and on the day advice. The real advice that everyone actually knows is it's all in the prep. There's no secret. If you haven't done the work and you haven't prepped the way that you need to prep, then we need to, I don't know what to tell you. I'll run into a dancer that's nervous. I'm like, oh, so like, have you been working hard? Have you been doing what you need to be doing? They're like, no, not really. I'm like, well, then I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. And we need to, once again, that long-term patience of just knowing what your goal and your game plan is, both for the Oireachtas now and whether it's the future or whatnot, we need to be prepping ahead of time. And there's still like time for some dancers now. I know this is going to be coming out like in the middle of it, but can we work backwards? Can we try to dance in the studio like you want to dance on stage instead of like just being afraid that my teacher's going to tell me my knee's bent today, so I'm going to bring it down lower? Like, yeah, but you're trying to kick high for the Oireachtas. So can we work backwards? Plus, like you as a teacher, I'm sure you see all the time, you see a dancer on stage and all of a sudden they do something brand new wrong that like you've never seen before, whether it's like all of a sudden their body's chugging or their arm shoots out or like something. It's like, and it's so frustrating as a teacher because you're like, obviously if I had seen that, I would have told them not to do that.
Yep.
You can recognize all the things that you normally see and you're like, okay, that tracks. But if it's something brand new, and 10 times out of 10, it's because they're trying harder than they ever would have in class. Not on purpose. They're just like, it's game day.
Yep.
So like, let's go. But you haven't been doing that in the studio. So like, I want to see you do that in the studio so that we can catch whatever silly thing you're going to do. Because there's going to be something. But like,
exactly.
I'd rather catch that now than that. So it's I can't talk about the day of without making sure we also say it's all in the prep, mentally, physically, everything. It's just, there's no replacement for the actual prep. And that's the actual prep, because a big anxiety also is knowing that you're about to go on stage, trying your hardest, whereas you've never actually done that in class.
Well, and so, I feel like there's, of course you're nervous. I feel like there's dancers who, because they're going to go out there and try their hardest, they're almost like afraid of like, well, if I go out and try my hardest and it still isn't enough, like, well, I don't want to do that. Like, it's that self-sabotage
1,000%. Yes. I realized years later that that's what I was doing when I wasn't taking competition as seriously. That's what it was. I wasn't going all in because I was afraid, like, if you go all in and fall short, it's going to suck so hard. It's going to destroy you. And luckily, once again, I've been through so much. I've done both. I have gone all in. Like, that's the thing. I won the Worlds in 2009. Great. I tried to win the Worlds in 2008. I went all in. I got fourth. And like, it was awful. But at the same time, like, I've also not gone all in to protect myself. Yeah. Emotionally protect myself.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
Not done well. It felt the same. It really did. And my biggest goal working with any dancer is, regardless of success or failure, I want you to be able to look back in 10, 20 years with zero regret.
Yep.
Like, because if, as long as you have zero regret that you act, because the unknown is so much worse. Like, well, I did pretty well. What if I had gone all in? And that's just like,
yeah. So, and the moment is now. You don't get the moment back.
Exactly. Especially as Irish dancers, like, and I love, like, adult dancing is taking off more and more. I love it.
Yeah.
But it's a real conversation that we have to, you can't dance forever. So,
and you also never know what's like coming down the pipeline. Like,
yeah,
what you know your body can do right now is, you know, it's, what you have to work with.
Take advantage of it while you have it, for sure.
Yep.
Absolutely. It's just one of those things that, like, why emotionally protecting yourself, I understand it logically. It doesn't actually work.
Yeah.
It doesn't, because it's going to feel crappy either way. And the worst one for holding back and emotionally protecting yourself is going to feel crappy for the rest of your life instead of just that one day.
Ugh. I agree. You're doing really important work. And any dancer who works with you is very lucky to have you in their corner. And I am going to put Scott's website where he has all of the different ways you can work with him in the show notes, because I would not be surprised if people are listening to this and say, I need this for so-and-so, or I need this for my class.
I appreciate that. It's so important, and it's just important to have the how, like the, you talk about all the things I share. I like to try to share actionable advice, because I don't, my good friend Kira Sexton, we coach dancers how to get into shows all the time. And it's one of those things that my favorite comment she's ever made. People always tell me to follow my dreams. Where? Around the kitchen table? And it's so true. Like it's one of those things. If you don't know how to do something, and especially dancers trying to get into shows too. Like, of course you don't know how to get into shows and what to do with your resume and video and stuff like that. Like, ask somebody. Like, that's it's always okay. I would not be where I am without help from so many. So this is my version of trying to just pay it forward, because we need actionable advice, not just like, you can do it. But how? But I need to not be nervous on the day. That's not possible. So like, let's work on the how to handle your nerves. It's like I said, it's not easy, but it is simple. Not rocket science, but it's so important, because there's so much noise in all of our heads.
Yeah.
And we need, like, when you're in teacher mode, don't you wish you could have used your teacher brain back when you were dancing?
Oh, absolutely. I am like laser focused when I'm teaching.
Right. And it's just when you see something, a dancer doing something incorrectly, does anything in your bones or brain say like, well, that's never going to get better, there's no way to fix that? I'm sure you just get to work.
Yeah.
Whereas us as dancers, like when we were dancing and dancers now, we don't have that clarity. One of those things. And I love testing dancers all the time. I say, what do you think is the number one skill an Irish dancer needs? And Irish dance training takes over and they're like, stamina or feet or this or that. And I'm like, yeah, those are all very important. The number one skill is problem solving. That's it. If you can't problem solve, then you're not going to get better to the degree that you can, because all of us have things that we need to problem solve. And your teachers have given you the knowledge. Now it's your job to problem solve.
You're inspiring me to set a problem solving challenge this week at class.
That's all Irish dancing is. Unless you have a physical disability, it's just problem solving. And at this level of dancing, at such a high athletic level, literally Olympic level athleticism, also in a sport where we're not even allowed to use our bodies correctly to jump and land and all these things. So it's extra hard. It's like, I don't know what your body can do versus my body, all these things. Like, you need to problem solve for your body. We can give you all the tips and tricks and knowledge, but you still have to go problem solve. Otherwise, like, what are we doing here? Stop showing up to class just with the attitude of, I hope teacher tells me how to dance today.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. I love that, you know, you do kind of turn it back on the dancer and give them the accountability and force them to take the personal responsibility, because that's something that I think is really important, that, you know, this is you, like you were saying before, you know, your teachers and your parents can't go out there and do it for you. You're the one who has to go out there.
Yep. It's one of those things. That's also like easier for me to, not having my own school or anything like that. I don't, whether it succeeds or fails, I care, but it doesn't affect me. So the clarity that comes with that, it's just like, this is what you got to do. Like, I don't, like, this is just what you have to do. And once again, bringing it back to my teachers, I went back to, because I'm the first to say, oh my God, it's like, I owe my teachers everything. I went back and I was talking to the school like the year after I won the Worlds, and I was just giving so much credit, and she stopped me. Lisa was like, Scott, do you know what made the difference? What like actually made the difference? And I went, I started listening to you. She's like, no, it's when you decided that you wanted it for yourself, not because of us, not because we were yelling at you, not because of any of that. When you decided that, and I was like, oh my God, she's right. So it's one of those things that like it's all personal accountability. It's personal accountability and self-awareness. There's going to be plenty of things that you're not good at. That's okay. Just work on it. It's like, I'm so bad at so many things in Irish dance. I just know how to fix it. Just that's all it is. Because the teacher, like, I especially higher level dancers, I love telling them, and like, this is not a diss to teachers at all. It's how many classes do you show up that you learn brand new information for the first time ever?
Yeah, hardly ever.
Yeah, they're like almost never. I'm like, so do you realize you don't have teachers anymore? You have coaches. They're coaching you. Stop showing up to class hoping they're going to teach you how to dance. They've already done that. Do you not know that you have to turn your feet out? Do you not know that you have to like get your legs up and straight? You have to figure out how. They're going to help, but like, you have to do that.
Definitely using that line at class this week too.
That's what it comes down to. It's like I love talking to dancers too, because there's so many amazing schools out there, and every once in a while they're like, oh, well, that school's blah blah blah. Like, okay, do you know that they have more like prelims and non-champs than world champs? So like, it's not just the teacher. Great, that's like, but that teacher is going to be able to help the dancers that go all in. They have tons of dancers that aren't. So like, we both are true. Like, absolutely amazing teaching, but like, they can't do anything with a dancer that's not trying to do it for themselves.
Right. You need the dancer to buy in. No one's a magician. Yeah.
No one. It's not. Oh, I love it. Yeah, I say it all the time. It's not magic. Whether you do well or you don't, it's not magic. That you have danced. Like, if you have your amazing day on the day, you have danced that way at least once in class. If you have your worst day, you have danced that way at least once in class. So like, that's the thing. The body doesn't just make up a brand new way to higher dance. You've done it before. But it's just problem solving. It's quieting that noise and getting back to work. And it's just, that helps me every single day in life. We have conference calls with our full teams where people will be talking about a problem, and one of us will literally say, hey, I understand. We understand what the problem is now. We've been talking about it for 10 minutes. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And without that attitude, you'll just get stuck in the loop.
So good. So much good stuff in this episode, Scott. Thank you again for giving me and the listeners your time.
Oh, I hope, my goodness. Thank you.
I hope a lot of people visit your website and work with you. And I will also ask you for the link for the Christmas in Killarney tickets.
Yeah.
So people awesome, yeah. can so, support your show if you are visiting their area.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Hopefully we love having dancers and families come to the shows. So and I choreographed the whole thing, so that's just me bragging. I'm not in it, but I'm not in this one, but it is our baby that we kind of send off.
Amazing.
To tour. Awesome. No, can't thank you enough. It's like, I love sharing and I'm learning from you as well. So conversations like this can only lead to a better Irish dance world.
Yeah. And that's why I do this. And this is why I brought it back, is it's good. Important stuff. It's important conversations. And I don't think they belong, you know, behind closed doors. It's for everybody.
Mm. Love that. No, it's what you're doing is so important. Don't forget that.
Thank you. Thank you so much to Diana, friend of the podcast. And I know a lot of you are really enjoying the content that we create together. So thank you so much to her for taking over the podcast for the week. And I hope that you guys jump into the Facebook group and give us some feedback. Let us know your thoughts. Or if there's anything that you would like to hear covered about this topic or others. I had planned to create an episode about my experience at the NAFC conference that I was at this past weekend, but it will have to wait just a little bit. And if you're looking for me on Instagram, I know things have been a little bit quiet. And for the most part, I get a lot of really, really positive feedback. In fact, up until this week, I've never gotten any bad feedback about the podcast or the content that I put out there. But I did receive some feedback recently that has made it just hard for me to be open and transparent and all of that on my Instagram, really just stopping me from sharing the content that I'd like to share. So your support means the world. Thank you for being a valued listener and engaging in our Facebook group. And hopefully I will get back in my groove on my Instagram game soon so that you guys can continue to engage with me and I can learn about you and help serve the wonderful world of Irish dancing that we all love so much. So until next time, this is TCRG to CEO Radio, and have a great rest of your week.